Right now on the Daily Debrief, Jeffrey Epstein is dead, but one of his accusers is filing suit against his estate and his alleged co-conspirator and madam. She says Epstein raped her when she was 15.
I was terrified and I was telling him to stop. Please stop, you know?
And in Florida, a man on trial for the execution-style murder of his neighbor. He admits he did it, but says it wasn't premeditated. Plus, verdict watch continues in the so-called Hollywood Ripper serial killer trial. We'll review the most compelling moments from closing arguments.
I believe Ashton Kutcher is the star witness in this case, and we're going to see why.
And when will the jury return with their verdict? The Daily Debrief recaps the nation's biggest legal stories. It's Wednesday, August 14th. Welcome to the Daily Debrief. I'm Angelica Spanos in tonight for Aaron Keller. I'm joined in the studio by our own Linda Kenny-Bodden, criminal defense attorney, and Cheryl Dorsey, former LAPD sergeant. Thank you both for joining us. An alleged victim of Jeffrey Epstein has filed a lawsuit against the deceased accused pedophile's estate and his alleged co-conspirator, Ghislaine Maxwell. Jennifer A. Rose has accused Epstein of repeatedly sexually assaulting her when she was 14 and 15 years old, including one incident of forcible rape. Maxwell, the British-born heir to a media fortune, was romantically involved with Epstein for years, and the two remained close. A. Rose is one of multiple alleged victims accusing Maxwell of facilitating their abuse with Epstein. Some victims, but not A. Rose, have accused Maxwell of participating in the abuse herself. Maxwell's whereabouts are unknown. She is believed to be out of the country. Epstein apparently committed suicide early Saturday morning in his jail cell. His death and the circumstances around it are all subject of multiple investigations. And after Epstein's arrest in July, A. Rose publicly accused him for the first time in an interview on NBC's Today Show.
You know, just take your underwear off and get on top. And I said I didn't want to. And he, very forcefully kind of brought me into the table. And I just did what he told me to do.
Did he hold you there?
Yeah,
No question in your mind, he knew you did not want that to happen.
Oh, yeah. No, he definitely, yeah. There was no way. I was like, I don't want to say I was screaming or anything of that nature, but I was terrified and I was telling him to stop. Please stop, you know?
And did he?
No, he did not stop. He had no intentions of stopping, and that's what he wanted, that's what he got.
All right, joining me is Linda Kenny-Bodden. We're going to talk about this. We know you're primarily a criminal defense lawyer, but you've also represented sexual abuse victims in civil court. There's an interesting thing with this. Jennifer A. Rose is suing Epstein's estate, Ghislaine Maxwell, and three unnamed employees, including the so-called recruiter. So it's clear how she was claiming she was harmed by Epstein and the recruiter, but Maxwell is only mentioned once in the entire complaint, and I'm going to read that for you right now. It says, upon information and belief, defendant Maxwell identified and hired the recruiter on behalf of defendant Epstein to procure underage girls and oversaw the process that led to the recruitment and grooming of Miss A. Rose. So it appears that A. Rose and Maxwell may have never even met. Do you think this weakens her case against Maxwell?
Well, let me first disclose that my husband, Dr. Michael Bodden, was present as released by the New York City Medical Examiner's Office at the autopsy of Mr. Epstein, just so that everybody knows that. But I know, I'm like Sergeant Schultz, I know nothing. All right, but having done these cases, you do not need to have that direct link. If they have information and belief, the plaintiff's attorney, that somebody told somebody else to procure somebody for a sexual assault, or even a sexual harassment, if this were a workplace, that would be good enough if they had the proof.
And let's talk about other victims. Some of them have already settled with Epstein. How does his death change everything surrounding that and other alleged accusers?
Well, now you have to go to sue the estate, his estate, or convert the cases to his estate. And also, given the Child Victims Act that went into effect today in New York State, which now eliminates statute of limitations for a one-year period, we have a look-back period, a lot of people can now file suit.
And talking about the New York Child Victims Act, which did go into effect today, it basically adds 5-year increase over the past statute of limitations. Do you think we're going to see a number of other victims now coming forward in relation to Epstein?
Sure. In relation to Epstein and anyone else, for this next year period, anybody can come forward no matter how long before they had been assaulted, as they say.
All right, Linda, thanks.
You're welcome.
A jury is now deliberating in the trial of a Florida man accused of murdering his neighbor in broad daylight. Chu Fang Ki, or Joe as he is often called, is charged with first-degree murder in connection with the shooting of Edward Lee Tudor. Authorities indicated that the defendant believed he was constantly bullied and harassed by Tudor, ultimately leading him to taking matters into his own hands. He wrote a letter to the judge in the case requesting the death penalty, writing these exact words, quote, "I'd plead no contest to the first-degree premeditated murder with a death sentence. I used a 9mm with the intent to kill, not just wound. Death sentence is a win-win for every side involved in this case." The judge turned down that request, and so the case went to trial. And today, the defendant took the stand in this case. Ki was on the stand in his own defense, although it's a bit of a stretch to use the word defense. First, he testified that he and the victim were at war over the music that the victim played that kept him from sleeping.
You heard the officers talking about things that Mr. Tudor did over a period of time, specifically making noises in order to keep you up at night. You remember hearing all of that?
Yes.
And were those statements and those descriptions of what Mr. Tudor would do, were they accurate?
Well, I said they were accurate.
And it was your belief that he did this specifically to prevent you from sleeping. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. Because we were in the war. We were in war, not in each other.
You said that you were at war. The two of you were at war.
Yes.
After this, Ki got to the heart of his defense, saying that his killing of Edward Tudor was not premeditated.
You've heard the word premeditation before, haven't you?
Yes.
Do you know what that word means?
Yes.
What do you think that word means?
It means plan or plan ahead.
And is it your position that when you killed Mr. Tudor that it was not premeditated? Is that your position?
Yes, thank you.
Why do you say that your shooting of Mr. Tudor was not premeditated?
Because I had not any plan trying to kill someone that day. And it's just that every night, we are all not knowing each other.
You recall then on the morning of January 23rd, you went to have your will or notarized, right?
Yes.
And that was not part of your plan to kill Mr. Tudor and leave a will?
No. Because usually I sleep until lunchtime, try to sleep until lunchtime, and then I woke up and then I microwave all meat and put it there and cook, and I went back to sleep until 3-4 o'clock. I woke up again.
All right, and in their closing argument, the prosecution focused on premeditation, arguing that the jury should reject the argument Ki made on the stand that his killing of the victim wasn't premeditated because he didn't wake up planning on committing the murder that day.
This can happen in the blink of an eye. And you may recall I used the example of baseball. There was a gentleman who was very knowledgeable about baseball, 60 and a half feet. And the amount of time it takes that ball to get from the pitcher's mound to home plate, and people who are throwing the ball slower than the pros is less than half a second. The amount of time, or the time that you have to reflect on that decision is ample. Now, in this case, we have months of reflection, months of consideration, and ultimately, when he goes over there, armed with two firearms, enters the unlocked door to surprise Edward Lee Tudor, he has decided and reflected and made the decision he is going to kill Edward Lee Tudor.
And the defense didn't have too much to work with for their closing argument, but they focused on the actions Key took that suggest that he snapped when he killed Tudor and wasn't planning the murder in advance.
Now, the state's position is that Mr. Tudor's death could not have been more premeditated. Mr. Key had planned it for years. Mr. Key testified that before the day that he shot Mr. Tudor, he had let bygones be bygones, that he was planning on moving out, putting his house up for sale, that he contacted real estate agents in an effort to do that. On the day that he shot Mr. Tudor, yes, he went to notarize his will and shot for an extra cartridge for his handgun, but what else did he do? He went to Walmart and bought 2 gallons of milk and a bag of cat food. Are these the actions of a man who's planning on going home and shooting his neighbor and committing suicide? No, they're not. Then he gets home and another episode of harassment occurs. And all the years of harassment that he endured come flooding back, causing him self-control.
All right, one of the biggest moments of this was when the prosecution played the surveillance tape that shows the killing as it happens. You're going to see that right now, but I want to warn you, this can be disturbing. Let's watch.
I'm sorry, Ms. Conner, can you see the individual in the red shirt that's entered the video? If you could just step down and tell us, is that Mr. Key, the defendant who you previously identified?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. You can resume your seat.
All right, so as you see there, Key is in the right side of the frame. He's wearing the red shirt. You see him walking next to the house. He walks out for a minute, comes back, and there you see Tudor, the victim, wearing the white shirt. He eventually goes down on his knees, hesitates before the Key shoots him, and then he falls and walks away. So it is incredible video to see, and that is very compelling evidence here for this trial. All right, before that came, we have a confession that came from this. We had the surveillance video. We have testimony from the defendant himself. And now in this case, we know that it is in the hands of the jury. So my guests here, Linda and Cheryl. Cheryl, I'll come to you first. What's it like interviewing a murder suspect and on top of that with an added confession?
Well, you know, you don't want to be personally involved because you want to, like he did, compartmentalize and get the information that's needed. You're going to be singularly focused as an interrogator on getting the statements that will support what you know has occurred. And so sometimes that involves appearing friendly, if you will, with a defendant. Sometimes it involves you being a little aggressive in your demeanor. Because at the end of the day, you're trying to solicit information that will support what's going to ultimately be a guilty verdict, a trial, a confession.
All right, Cheryl and Linda, what do you think of Key taking the stand today and basically saying that none of this was premeditated?
It sounds like that either his mom, he was doing it for his mother, or that he's under jail medication. And now, later on, after this has all happened, under the medication, he says, did I really do that? And he's just trying to make up a story that it wasn't premeditated. Or maybe that's the way he now feels.
All right, Linda, thanks. Still ahead tonight on The Debrief, an American rapper is convicted of assault in Sweden, but not facing prison time. We'll tell you why. And it's been hours and days of deliberations for the jury in the Hollywood Ripper trial. How will the closing arguments from the 3-month-long trial play into the jury's decision? We'll bring you that when we come back. Stay with us. Welcome back. Guilty is the verdict from a Swedish court in the assault trial of rapper A$AP Rocky. The rapper, whose real name is Rakim Mayers, was convicted along with two members of his entourage for his part in a street brawl that left a 19-year-old bleeding and needing medical treatment. But in a victory of sorts for Rocky, he was sentenced time to serve, meaning he won't go back to jail after spending a month before trial in a Swedish detention center. He was ordered to pay restitution to the victim and court costs as well. Rocky was allowed to return to the U.S. after his trial while awaiting the verdict. The sentence avoids any extradition issues between the Swedish and U.S. governments. After the case was brought to his attention by Kim Kardashian, President Trump tweeted multiple times in support of the rapper. And jurors in the trial of the so-called Hollywood Ripper are in their third day of deliberations. Michael Gargiulo is facing two murder charges in the stabbing deaths of Ashley Ellerin and Maria Bruno, and one attempted murder charge for allegedly stabbing Michelle Murphy. All of these occurred between 2001 and 2008. He is also accused of killing an 18-year-old woman outside of Chicago, where he will stand trial after this California case concludes. In their closing argument, the defense thought to separate the cases and create reasonable doubt with a host of alternate theories that read like a Hollywood script. For defendant Maria Bruno, the defense pointed the finger at her ex-husband, who admitted to beating her while they were married. They had a similar theory for the death of Ashley Ellerin, claiming that it may have been part of a jealous love triangle involving Ashton Kutcher and the apartment manager.
I believe Ashton Kutcher is the star witness in this case, and we're going to see why. Ashley telling Mr. Kutcher, I just got out of the shower, 8:24. Todd Jackson saying 8:25, 8:30, he hears two screams. Who do you think the next important witness is? Mark Durbin. And I'll tell you why. This guy, Mark Durbin, says he went over there about 7 p.m. with the intent to have sex. He says he was there for about an hour and a half before he left to go down to the Bonita Apartments. He says he was there when Ashley was showering, as I mentioned. He was there when she got the phone call, Mr. Kutcher. Well, you know what? He's also there when Todd Jackson hears the screams coming from the yellow house. Look at the time.
All right, well, on rebuttal, prosecutors said that the alternate killer theory just doesn't work because the timeline doesn't add up. Mark Durbin, the man the defense says killed Ellerin, didn't have enough time to kill her. We know this because he had to get home so his girlfriend wouldn't find out or know that he was cheating on her with Ashley.
The defense is doing what we see is called, you know, some other guy did it. Defense. And that's what they're doing here. They're accusing Mark Durbin of murdering Ashley Ellerin. Let's look at some facts now that show clearly all the evidence points to Mr. Gargiulo. Here's what we know. Mark Durbin had absolutely no motive to harm Ashley. He loved Ashley. There was no physical evidence connecting him with the harm of Ashley. No DNA. He was totally cooperative with the police at all stages of the investigation, unlike Mr. Gargiulo. When they tried to get Mr. Gargiulo's DNA, he bolted. It took four police officers to tackle him. They set up a timeline where there's simply not enough time for Mr. Durbin to have committed this murder with these injuries in the time period suggested. At 8:24, Ashley was alive. Ashley was on the phone with Ashton Kutcher. What we do know from Mark was that he was trying to get home. He had to get home by 8:30 for sure because his girlfriend, Nicole Harlan, and he was hiding his relationship with Ashley from Nicole. She was coming home. He had time pressure to get home by 8:30. Even if you accept the timeline the defense is giving you, there is not enough time for Mark Durbin to commit this crime and get home. There just isn't enough time. When you look at Ashley's body and what was done to her by Mr. Gargiulo, 47 stab wounds, and what was done to her, that takes some time to do that, even under the best of interpretations of this timeline.
All right. While the defense denied the defendant killed Ashley Ellerin or Maria Bruno, they did admit that Gargiulo broke into Michelle Murphy's home and stabbed her. But he explained it like this.
Michelle Murphy is the only count in which the prosecution has shown that Mr. Gargiulo was in her apartment and attacked her. So why is this important? We look at the testimony of Michelle Murphy, who said, and I admit she went through a terrible experience. If we could make it not happen, we would have. But the bottom line is she says that she's fighting off Mr. Gargiulo when all of a sudden he cuts himself. He stands up. He like comes out of a fog. He stands up, looks around, says, I'm sorry, and runs out. This is an individual who just came to from a dissociative fugue. Didn't know where he was, didn't know what he was doing, has no recollection and no memory.
All right, back to my panel here. Linda, I'll start with you. What'd you think about these alternate theories that the defense brought up?
Well, it's the best they can do. I mean, the question regarding time with Ashley Ellerin, could somebody else have done it? Well, you do have a good close suspect. However, this is 47 stab wounds in the prosecution, right? This took time. If I start stabbing you and you have 47 wounds and defensive wounds, it just didn't happen in 30 seconds just like that.
So do you think that the prosecution did a good job in discrediting them?
Yes, I do. I think the prosecution has done an excellent job in this case. However, you only need one jury, as we know, as a defense attorney, to be able to hang on one count, and that's a possibility.
All right, and Cheryl, do you think that the prosecution built this case describing Gargiulo as a serial killer? They talk about his MO, how he stalked, watched, learned all the habits of these women, and then obviously killed them when he knew he had the time. Does he warrant being classified as a serial killer if he is end up being found guilty?
Well, we've got multiple victims, and listen, if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, then it's a duck. And I think the reason that he ran is because he had paid particular attention to trying not to leave DNA. And he realized, I'm cut, I'm bleeding, oh no, I've got to get out of here. It makes sense to me.
All right, Cheryl, thank you guys so much for joining us tonight. Our live coverage and our live trial will resume tomorrow at 9 o'clock, standard Eastern time in the morning on the Law and Crime Network. Stay with us.